Yeah, I'm a little for camp. Yeah, that's it. We're signing off. I'm not doing this again until they pay me the big bucks on commercial radio. And you better believe they will, because I am totally awesome. And you have listened to the last DJ Tanner's most totally awesome sports show ever. But we're gonna kick off the last the next hour here, the 9 a.m. hour, with Miles Hamilton's. I was just saying this earlier. It's very difficult to use your name in the possessive because
yeah,
your first name.
I was listening.
Yeah. It's a tough thing to do. I guess I never tried, or maybe I did once before and I didn't really think about it.
Well, I don't really have that problem because I don't own many things, so I don't have to use the possessive all that often.
Yeah, but you got to think.
It's a good way to look at it.
You got to start thinking egotistical, self-absorbed, totally awesome radio personality. This is the business. This is the nature of the business. You gotta have that me first, and when you do that, then you have to start speaking in the third person.
Right.
It's no longer, me, it's not, Ben wants this, Ben wants that, DJ Tanner wants this, DJ Tanner wants that, DJ Tanner wants a coffee, hello, Miles Hamilton.
That's true. This isn't my real name. Well, it is my real name. Miles is my
middle name.
Your middle
name, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But I use it mainly because I don't want people who are on NC State who might have happened to listen to me just come up and say, are you that guy on the radio I heard?
Hey,
and just punch me in the face.
The NC State people.
Even though it's on radio, I would still feel pretty bad that I'd have a black eye or something.
No, I agree. It's not the NC State people I'm worried about, though. It's all those guys up at the State Pen who are thrilled to hear, I might add, I'm sure, that this is both mine and your last show. That means a lot more of Uncle Paul and death metal for our friends upstate. But
I'm sure they'll appreciate that. They're probably cheering right now.
Right now, yeah. I think I just doubled in ratings, yeah. I just went from 2 to 4. Woo! But anyway, yeah, we're going to segue here. We're gonna get up to my man, Mr. Hamilton, one last time. I guess it would be appropriate for me to say, thank you to WKNC for giving me the opportunity. Thank you, Beast. For always coming on the show and providing another opinion. And even though he's not here and probably not even listening because he's asleep because he's an old man and, probably too much wine, to John Mayo, wherever you are out there, I appreciate you always coming on the show with me as well. It's been a great experience. It's been awesome. And, that's it. So goodbye, everybody. I'll see you when I'm rich and famous. And here's Miles.
Most of the examples you've heard were recorded under laboratory conditions. Now, listen to 88.1.
That's right. This is the last Miles Hamilton show ever. Limited edition. Wrap it up in a box. Keep it in mint condition. It'll be worth something 20 years from now. Thank you.
Okay. Now, what were you doing?
Go ahead.
You were totally, you could not wait to say that one. You came up with that sometime, Tuesday this week, and you're like, just give me that chance. Get me on there one more time. That was pretty good, though. I give you dap for that. Good job, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I actually came up with it last night.
You were pretty giddy. You had a hard time going to sleep.
Yeah, I actually did. And because of that, it must be the end of the world as we know it.
The fury's beating down your neck.
And I feel fine. This is the Miles Hamilton Show here on WKNC. And as a special treat, Marty will be joining us. Hopefully, if I can figure out this phone thing. Marty got done with his finals, like, just a while, like, early in the week. And so he is actually back home in Florida. So he's going to call us here live. And for the first time and the last time, you will actually hear Marty. Here he is. He's calling in. Let me see if I can. Now, Marty, are you there? Marty.
Yo.
All right. I actually have you. Well, it seems like I don't have you actually on the radio right now. Try to say a few things. No, let's see. You just need to keep on talking, Marty, until I can actually hear you.
Alrighty.
All right.
Well, it will be true to be self-evident that
you're on the air now, Marty.
Oh, really?
Yes, you are. And of course, you know, being an observer of the show for so long, obviously you need to say something to the people to explain why you chose not to talk on the radio for so long, and why you chose now of all times to talk.
Well, geez, let's see here. Why I haven't actually been coming up to talk before this. Let's see, do I want to give the honest answer or just the one that makes you look good?
The honest answer obviously doesn't involve me keeping you from talking and forcing you to just sit there and listen and seethe in your own anger and juices as I make fun of you day after day. That wasn't the real answer.
No.
Yeah, the one that makes me look good would definitely be the better answer.
Okay, I was too shy, I just couldn't stand up to your amazing radio presence.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think I'm a fool of myself. So. I totally wasn't, you know, sitting back there on the computer fact-checking anything or handing you stories or anything like that. No,
you definitely were. You were definitely a big help occasionally when I had some things that I needed to talk about. Or you definitely gave me a couple good stories over the years. And I remember we've talked about this a couple of times, about if you had the opportunity to host this show yourself, what would have been some of the things that you would have done, Marty?
Oh, good grief. I would have looked at you for inspiration. Let's see.
You don't have to keep sucking up to me. This is my last show. Nobody's going to remember me after 10 o'clock.
Fine. Fabulous. Let's see. I'd have probably changed the intro music, but, of course, you did that in the last couple shows. Other than that, I don't know, talked about whatever was in the news. You did such a fine job, I'd probably have just, you know, really have done what you did.
Well, that sounds... thank you, Marty. I appreciate that. And
what can I say? You've done a good show over the last... How long has this been, anyway?
I've been here for a year. I started back in January, and I'm ending just right now. They're kicking me out because now I'm graduating, going on to the great beyond...
Aren't we all?
Well, eventually.
How are the finals, by the way? You think you rocked them?
Oh, yeah. I rocked them, especially my political philosophy. That was all essays, but yeah, I nailed that one. And
how would any listener of this show ever guess that that might be your major?
Definitely. I think I might have mentioned it a couple of times. My major is political science. Definitely not communication. If my major was communication, yeah, people would definitely notice that I wasn't going to do well in those classes. But yeah, so let's go ahead and get started. We got a couple minutes. We got a couple minutes. Well, get started talking about the news because this is what this show is about.
Absolutely.
And
Let's get in it.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes before my mandatory break here. But I think
right in with both feet. What's the first item on the agenda?
I think we need to talk about the Tehran conference on whether the Holocaust actually really existed or not. And I showed you this clip of David Duke, who attended this conference in Tehran. And for those people of you that don't know who David Duke is, he is a former Louisiana senator, not a U.S. senator, a senator from of the Louisiana General Assembly, and also a former KKK member. And also he ran for U.S. House, U.S. Senate president. He also ran for U.S. president on both a Republican and a Democratic ticket, different years. And he's basically a white supremacist, although I'm not sure he would call himself that. But he basically is. And he was on CNN a few nights ago because they invited him to talk because he was part of this Tehran conference about the Holocaust. And he just said some of the most outrageous things. I was going to get some clips, but they just didn't turn out good enough to.
Man, those would have been good.
Yeah, those would have been, but their quality, you just wouldn't have been able to hear it on the radio. I apologize for that because some of those, you know, if you really want to, you just need to look up like David Duke CNN on YouTube, and you'll bring up the. The clip just fine. I mean, it's about a 7 minute clip, 7 or 8 minute clip.
It's a meeting between him and Wolf Blitzer, and he essentially just slathers Wolf Blitzer with the most egregious accusations of being like a Zionist, a Jewish supremacist. And he considers himself normal. He actually seems to be thinking like he's making a logical point. That's the most amazing part about it.
Yeah, well, what always, you know, surprises me about these people who always talk about how the Jews are going to take over the world and how everything revolves around, you know, these evil Jews. They always say things like, my favorite part, and by favorite part I mean the most outrageous thing that he said, was that he said that the United States was a proxy of Israel. Israel wow. was controlling the United States to do that's what it wanted to do, and that the Iraq War,
right there.
Yeah, the Iraq War was like completely because or Israel wanted the United States to attack Iraq for its own purposes, and
so that was the reason. Oh, yeah,
yeah,
and little Jewish conspiracy. Okay, I get it. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, yeah. and. It was funny because he like mentioned all these high officials in the Bush administration at the time, like Wolfowitz and stuff. And they said, sounds like a Jewish wedding to me. It was like the most outrageous thing.
Because we all know Rumsfeld is one of the greatest Jewish names of all time.
Yeah, of course we know that. And so is Bush and Cheney. But and Wolf Blitzer even pointed that out. He's like, well, what about all these other people in the Bush administration? Those don't sound like Jewish names to me. And then.
Oh well, them are just
And then David Duke just went on like because Wolfowitz had like worked for AIPAC, was a lobbyist for AIPAC, and so he was a what did he call him? He called him like a Zionist agent, a secret agent for Israel.
The Zionist regime, yeah.
Yeah, it was
helping to spread Zionism. I mean. Wow.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest things.
It's good to see these people for who they really are.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a big hit over at the Tehran conference. I mean, God knows, they need more anti-Semites in Iran.
Of course. And also, you know, the other thing that...
like coming home to him.
Yeah, it was. I'm sure, like, Ahmadinejad and David Duke, they're like bosom buddies. I'm sure of it. They even, while they were doing that interview, they even showed... If you noticed, they even showed, like, on the side of David Duke and Ahmadinejad, shaking hands. And Ahmadinejad, he's a short man.
Yeah,
I don't know
is.
If... he is really short. He like
That's
David
one
Duplett.
Virtue of Iranian politics. They can actually put a short man in office.
Well,
and again, they put into absolute power by...
Even after...
That's democracy of a kind.
Yeah, well, even after the invention of television, they could still elect a short man.
Yeah.
Can't do... You know... Madison would never get elected now if he were running for president now.
Or TR, it's tragic. Or me.
Well, you know, you just got to, you know, exemplify some of your better attributes. Just because you're a little deficient on the height scale,
you got to make it up with something. Like
you got like charisma.
Like, you know, hating Semites.
Okay.
About the end of the world, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, we don't have to worry about that because this final show is a sign of the end of the world.
Absolutely. We've had a good run. I'm proud. I think we're going to be handing it off to a really good species. The dolphins, I think, are in the running.
Or the cockroaches. It depends on which way the world goes.
It's going to be a fight. It's going to be the cockroaches and the dolphins, and it is going to be on.
Yeah. Well, I got to take a break. Hopefully, I'm not going to disconnect you, Marty, but if I do, you're just going to need to call back again. And we're going to talk about the Iraq study group after this break. So everybody better stay tuned. This is the Miles Hamilton Show on WKNC.
I have a special admiration and love for
KNC 88.1. You like rock?
Yeah!
Keep it locked to the all-rock afternoon.
You're kidding.
It is true.
Monday through Friday, noon to 6 p.m. Only on KNC 88.1.
Crazy Larry's Gold Teeth and Platinum Fronts, where you don't even have to have teeth to look like a gold thief. Right now, Larry's running the Wotus Special, where we will cap every other tooth in the top and bottom of your grill. It's guaranteed to make your friends say,
"Damn, Wotus."
Check this out. If you like somebody else's front, you might be interested in our number one stunner package. We'll find the other person, take the teeth out of their mouth, and put them in your mouth for no extra charge.
Bling, blah.
And for you senior citizens in the house, we got you Big Mamas and you OGs covered with the gold and platinum dentures.
Ah, watch out now.
Larry's Gold Teeth and Platinum Fronts are located about 2 blocks away from Club I Don't Know, right off the Beltline. For more information, call 2-888-MY-TEETH or visit the website at www.tefs.com.org. Because at Crazy Larry's, we'll have you saying, "Damn, Larry, you crazy."
Welcome to the NC State Voice Message Service.
First message.
Man, what the hell is your guys' problem? You guys used to f***ing talk. They just a bunch of pussies. And please shut the hell up and play some music.
I just want to say I love me some K-Sara.
When the f*** do you guys have DJs up there?
I call, no one's there. I want to hear something.
End of message.
We here at WKNC would like to thank all the listeners who call in and voice their support. Thanks for listening.
Excuse me, it's been brought to my attention that a few bad apples out there are smoking marijuana. I've got news for you, my friend. Marijuana's illegal, not cool. All right, then. Establishment, establishment, you always know what's best.
You suck! Learn the rules!
Welcome back to the Miles Hamilton Show here on WKNC. And joining me, hopefully, still on the line is Marty.
Oh, yeah, right over here.
Yep. All right. We had a couple of technical difficulties. If you heard Marty over the radio, that was completely unintentional during the break. But, oh, well, you know, it's my last show. What are they going to do, fire me? Seriously.
Let's see, what's all the foul language we can think of? No.
I don't want to, they can fire me, but they could still find me. So definitely don't want to do something like that. You said you wanted to talk about, say one more thing about Aminajad before we moved on to...
I just wanted to mention to anybody who doesn't know who David Duke is, I just said they really ought to look this guy up because he has, just on the side, the grodiest case of Michael Jackson syndrome anybody's ever seen. I mean, he did the same thing, a little ploy he did about, I guess it was probably about 10 years ago, when he got plastic surgery to make himself more attractive and also less recognizable from his Ku Klux Klan days in order to run for office. And he's just about as creepy to look at as Michael Jackson.
That's true. I think he got like a little bit of a nose and chin job or something
and
like that.
Eyes. He looks kind of like a frog. That was the impression I get. He looks
actually,
like that one Republican senator, I can't think of his name right now, that they took a police photograph of him with a big smile on his face, and it just comes off as creepy. He has that same sort of face.
Yeah, well, that makes sense now that, he does kind of look like a frog from what I saw.
It's tragic. So you got a hater who changed his appearance. Isn't this basically the story of Lord Voldemort? I mean, is he going to be like the Dark Wizard King now or something?
I'm not sure.
Something more pleasant.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that this is going to be all that much more pleasant. The reason I wanted to talk, I talked a little bit about the Iran conference, I keep on saying Iran conference. I'm still on that. The Iraq study group. Mm-hmm. The thing about the Iraq study group, I talked about it a little bit last week, but some of the things I talked with this one person on Wednesday, and they were saying things about like, well, what was the point of the Iraq study group if Bush isn't going to do any of it? And she like said like I heard the first thing after this Iraq study group, oh, we're not going to talk with Iran, we're not going to talk with Syria, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that. And so she was wondering, well, then what's the point of having this Iraq study group if the president isn't going to do any of it? Well, yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people think that is like, and a lot of people thought that about the 9/11 commission is like, and the Democrats got on top of this. They were like, we want to implement every single reform that the 9/11 commission says, and as if this is going to fix everything, and it's going to prevent another 9/11 from happening ever again. And this is kind of the same way that some people are viewing this Iraq study group, is that if we actually followed all 79 points of the Iraq study group, then everything's going to be hunky-dory. Everything's going to be good. Everything's going to work out completely well. And they're not fallible like every other human, every other committee. I mean, what good has ever come out of a committee? Seriously. I mean, other than like something like the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, but even then, those were mainly the creation of Jefferson, of one person, Jefferson and Madison.
Mm-hmm. And the rest just rubber stamped it.
Right. That's pretty much. And for each one that, especially for like the Declaration of Independence, some of them took out the more, the committees took out like some of the more juicier stuff. So it's still, it's...
Like hot, army beach babes into Iraq to make the populace a bit more agreeable. Yeah, that just got left out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess committees have some good for them. But what I wanted to talk about, at least, is this idea that, that these committees are like the magic bullet. They're not going to fix anything. They're studies of a lot of people from a broad spectrum of backgrounds. And the Iraq study group had, a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats. And I think they had an even number. And so you have basically political neutrality. You have this group that needs to make a unanimous decision. And so you're not going to get, anything on one extreme or the other. You're just going to get the compromise. And compromise is good in a lot of cases. But sometimes solutions don't come from compromises. Solutions come from one side or the other. Sometimes you have to be, you know, at least in my opinion, to get things done, you can't always be a moderate. You can't always be a conservative. You can't always be a liberal. You have to choose the correct response for each individual situation that comes about.
That can definitely be true.
But yeah, but it might be that the Iraq study group is on the right track, that they have the right, you know, they have the right solution for Iraq. That might be true. I'm not sure. Because I'm not expert in that field.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other study groups going on other than just this Iraq study group of the Baker-Hamilton Commission.
Yeah, the Bush administration has their own going, too.
The Bush administration has their own going, and so does the Defense Department. The Defense Department has their own going on. And I actually heard on NPR a couple days ago of this, the guy who was putting together this, and he went through the way that he went about his his study. And I don't know if he was the chair or if he was just, you know, the guy that was putting together this study, but it was more the people than him. He was just kind of like the lead guy or the guy that talks on the radio about it. And he said he went and talked to generals, the generals in the Pentagon and the generals in Iraq. And then he also went down and he talked to the sergeants and the people who are actually commanders on the ground, actually in the battle zones. And his main point was that the people on the battleground, the people in Iraq, if you withdraw without having, you know, stabilized the region, that is going to be a tremendous morale, you know,
drop
depletion. Yeah, it's just going to take morale out of the armed forces. Even though there's a large percentage of people in the military in Iraq that don't agree with what's happening, there is a large percentage of people in the military that still believes in the cause and still believes that they're doing a good thing. And what frustrates them, and he said this, I wish I could remember his name. I'm sure it's on the NPR website if you, I don't know, you search for that. I probably should have found his name again. But one of the things he said about these sergeants and what, like, the last wave that went through Baghdad was that they would go and they'd clear a neighborhood, but they wouldn't have enough people to keep a contingent there to keep the peace. They'd just have to move on. And so they'd be very effective in cleaning out insurgents and bad guys in a neighborhood. But once they moved on to the next neighborhood, the insurgents would just move back in. And so that's the problem that they're facing right now in Baghdad. And so the suggestion for the study in the Pentagon is to add like three or four more brigades to Baghdad and another brigade to the Anbar province so that you have enough people that so you go through another clean sweep through Baghdad, but you still have enough people to stay behind in every neighborhood to keep the people out. And
keep some forces on the street, sort of like a police force.
Yeah, pretty much. And you keep, and after you've cleaned out Baghdad and you have troops in every single neighborhood keeping the bad guys out, then as the Iraqi army and police are trained, they start taking over neighborhood by neighborhood so that you never have a moment where there aren't security forces in a neighborhood in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, and that seems to be like
that
a really good strategy.
Reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing about it is it really politically possible in the United States? Because that would be I don't remember, like five brigades. That would be around 30,000 more troops in Iraq.
If you might recall, is actually what John McCain is suggesting in Congress right now. He's bucking the trend against pretty much all of his fellow congressmen on both sides of the aisle by actually arguing for an increase in troop numbers about to the tune of 30,000.
Yeah,
which goes right alongside what you just reported.
Right, and so what we have here is we have a decision to make. You have to make a decision. And this was like, I don't know, a couple months back or maybe just a month back. I have a hard time remembering, you know, dealing with time. I don't know.
Well, don't worry, Einstein said it doesn't mean you're cool.
You have about a month ago when I think it was the Pentagon released a small study that you have basically three options. You have the go long, the go short, or leave. So you can either leave right now. You can leave in the short term, or you can stay for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are right now is we have very few people in the United States that want to stay for the long term, that want to finish the job. And I think that's because a lot of people just don't believe that it's possible to finish the job.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be possible to, you know, get every single thing to leave Iraq as this pristine utopia in the Middle East of democracy and freedom. It might not be possible to do that. But it is possible to leave Iraq in a better situation. At least I still believe that it's best to leave Iraq in a situation where it's better off than it was before we invaded.
It's more than that. We have to. I mean, there really is no choice. I mean, if we leave the place unstable, you know, we've just created terror land, like terror capital over there.
Well, the other thing is, you don't just have this terrorist thing going on, but if you have these unsettled disputes between the Sunnis, the Shiites, and the Kurds,
other countries,
it's going to bring in other countries. Because even as, and this is another thing that the Iraq Study Group was talking about, and the Saudi Arabian government told Bush that if they pull out, if the Americans pull out of Iraq before things get settled down, the Saudi Arabians are going to back the Sunnis financially and possibly even militarily. If that happens, if Saudi Arabia gets involved in Iraq and starts supporting the Sunnis against the Shiites, Iran and Syria are going to come in on the side of the Shiites. And then you have like this Middle East battle between not just centralized within Iraq. You have it across the whole Middle East. And you have the possibility of Jordan and Egypt getting involved. And then as that fighting's going on, I'm sure the Kurds at some point are going to say, you know, we don't need this. Let's just form our own sovereign nation of Kurdistan. And then,
which is about 3 by 5 miles on either side.
Well, yeah, but mainly in the north. And then once that happens, Turkey is going to get really anxious about this because Turkey has a very sizable Kurdish population in southern Turkey. And those Kurds, possibly, if Kurdistan becomes a nation carved out of Iraq, those Turkish Kurds are going to say, we need to become part of that. And then Turkey's going to get involved. And so you have this could very easily,
sort of like the tripartite alliance, only not getting along quite so well.
Right. You just have this could go from bad to worse very easily. And the way that I've described it, it's so believable. That's not a very hard, you know, gap to jump.
It's not a loss that the American army can afford to take. I mean, to have said that we lost all these lives and then to pull out, only to watch everything we've done not only disappear, but become actually worse, to become like a three-way war across the entire Middle East.
Right.
And Greece, we can't have this on our hands.
And we talk about that. Is like they'll say, you know, people who are against this war will say things like, Well, it was better with Saddam. Maybe Saddam was a bad guy. We'll grant you that. Saddam was a bad guy and everything else like that, but at least he kept the people in line. And at least there wasn't all this war. And now the United States comes in, and there's this civil war going on and all this other stuff going on. And it just, it's just so terrible that we need to get out so that, you know, so that some of this fighting will stop and so it'll be better off. It'll be better off if we leave. But if we left right this moment, and the Iraq Study Group isn't advocating that. The Iraq Study Group is advocating withdrawal by 2008.
Right.
But if we left right now, like a lot of people want to happen, you're just going to increase human suffering. You're just going to increase, I mean, possibly the United States being in Iraq right now and the coalition forces being in Iraq right now is actually the best option right now. Because if we left...
Anything to keeping it from all going down.
Right. Keeping it from... Yeah, because the Americans, you know, the Saudis and the Iranians and the Turks aren't going to get involved in Iraq, at least not directly. There's an argument that Iran is getting involved indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to get involved directly as long as the United States is there, as long as the United States is trying to get, you know, at least the moderate forces in each of these three groups to work together. It just would go all downhill. And it's hard to see if there was an immediate withdrawal, how it could go uphill. But some people argue, well, maybe there just should be a civil war. Just let the Americans leave and just let the Shiites and the Sunnis fight it out. But again, that's not going to stay centralized in Iraq. Because it's a war against two religious factions that divides the Middle East. And the Middle East, yeah, other countries are going to get involved. So that's just... as one of those big, you know, questions, those big question marks in Iraq policy, what should it be? You know, people, you know.
We have to be responsible about this. We can't be like most of the public and most of the news media seems to be, just throwing up their hands and saying, you know what, Bush has botched it. There's nothing we can do. He's a moron. You know, we got to get out. We got to get this done.
And that's not to say. Of course, but that's not to say that Bush hasn't made mistakes. He's obviously made mistakes. The administration has made mistakes, and you have to move beyond that. You have to say you can't always be living in the past and saying, "Well, we entered on false assumptions, or things are going badly right now, or you know, we should have fought the war differently 2 years ago." You can't go back and change that. The only thing that you can do is you can say, if we fought the war badly 2 years ago, or we did something wrong 2 years ago, then what can we learn from that event 2 years ago and apply it to now so that we can have a better outcome in the future?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way. You always have to live in the present. If you continue to live in the past, as a lot of these people do, and you mix the past with the present, as if saying that we shouldn't have gone into Iraq in the first place. Let's just, as an example, let's just say that that's true, that we shouldn't have gone into Iraq in the first place, but we're in Iraq now. It's as if by saying that we can, like, just do backsies and say, oh, mulligan, all those years in Iraq doesn't count anymore. It just doesn't count. Let's just leave and pretend like nothing happened. In fact, let's just put Saddam Hussein back in power just to make it, you know, feel like nothing's happened, and we'll just start over from there. You can't do that. Even in that most extreme position, even if you got Saddam out of jail, put him back into power, and hope that he's going to be as effective leader as he was before the invasion, it's just not going to happen.
No, Yeah, there'd be a little bit of awkwardness there. I mean, they'll have to adjust to the beard.
Yeah, well, beyond the awkwardness.
So, you know, the whole thing about dragging the statue through the streets, I mean, we were just kidding.
Right. We were just kidding.
I hope you didn't take that too hard.
Well, and that's the whole point, is that it's irrelevant right now. Right now, dealing with this war right at this moment, it's irrelevant if we went in with faulty information or good information or information that was faulty or whatever you want to say about it. It doesn't help with the situation right now. Now, say a couple decades later, you're looking back at this event and it's all in the past, and then you can say, okay, so what were the events that led to this problem that led us to get into a war that we probably shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place? If that is the assumption of history 20 years from now, then it's good to look and say, you know, they shouldn't have done this or they should have done this. But that's all done and looking back at history, you're not going to make any direct decisions in Iraq based upon that, because it's already over one way or the other. And so one of the things that always talking with people that are like for immediate withdrawal, it'll feel good. It would feel good to get all our men and women in uniform, come back to the United States. None of them are going to be dying after they leave. And, yes, you know, and we can talk, you know, yeah, it's a bad thing that the Iraqis over there, they're killing themselves, and it's bad, but at least none of the Americans are dying.
Which I think is a type of weird nationalism that you're seeing in, oddly enough, the war opponents who are calling the, you know, the Bush administration racist. There's like this reverse racism saying that it doesn't matter what's going on anywhere else in the world. Our job is to protect just Americans, like we're special. Like,
right,
we have no right to lose any of our lives on behalf of anybody else for anything, including security.
Or freedom.
Like that.
Right. Freedom is a...
Isolationism really is a type of weird nationalism.
Well, it's also...
It's used by people on the left.
Yeah, it's also a weird kind of isolationism. As if, you know, we can't get involved in any country... Or get involved in anything that happens,
mm-hmm,
because it would cost American lives of any sort. And I hope nobody on the listening gets me wrong. Right. An American death is a horrible thing.
Absolutely.
But an Iraqi death is just as horrible a thing.
Not negligible.
Right. It's not negligible. And it's always interesting when you're listening to American news broadcasts. You know, it's such a tragedy when 7 Americans die, and then there's a footnote, you know, 70 Iraqi policemen died as well.
Yeah, and it's like, that's a tragedy. 70 Iraqis, that's a statistic.
Yeah, that's a statistic. But the 7 Americans are a tragedy. But and yeah, it's bad because there's 7 families who have a brother or a sister or a dad or a mother that isn't coming home, and that's horrible.
Absolutely.
But that's times 10 for the Iraqis.
I know.
And if you just think about it in terms, in just utilitarian terms, and I'm not a utilitarian, but just look at that at that point. If Americans leave, you have a whole bunch more deaths in Iraq. But it's happening in Iraq. It's not happening in America. So it's not that bad of a thing, because we're not directly affected by it, at least not right now. Because in the scenario that the very likely scenario, if we did withdraw and you have a big war going through dealing with several countries in the Middle East.
Across the entire region.
Across the entire region, the United States is going to get affected one way or the other. And
oh, yeah.
The bad thing about it is that most Americans wouldn't care until it started sending gas prices into $4 and $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
And then we would get so mad about it. It was like, how can we pay these prices? We got to stop this war. Why? And then you have the people who are advocating for the withdrawal of the United States forces complaining about, why did we withdraw in the first place? Because $2 a gallon was bad enough. Mm-hmm. Now I have to deal with $5 a gallon. And you know, it's always Monday morning quarterbacking, all that other stuff.
On top of that, the whole region just becomes like this huge recruiting ground for Osama, because it's going to be this huge region of despair and anguish and hatred and rivalry. And that's the best thing the terrorists can possibly hope for.
Right.
That many willing killers.
And who is responsible for it? Who would be responsible for it? The Americans, because the Americans left. The Americans left it in this state of disarray. And it would eventually come back to us. A few years later, a couple decades later, however it happens, it would come back to us. And so in that way, it would still be a problem. I'm going to take like a short like minute break here, and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about something, you know, a little bit on the more brighter side, hopefully. So stay tuned. This is the Miles Hamilton Show, along with Marty. Final show on WKNC before I graduate. Stay tuned.
KNC. When you need music that will cut through, music that sounds different, then reach for 88.1.
Where's the illest club in Raleigh?
I don't know.
That's right, the only club that keeps it crunk like a bad back, and the world's only baby mama's night is back in
effect. We'll get down to the real deal, partner.
On Thursday night, if you a baby mama, bring two of your baby daddies, and guess what? You get in and you get to get your wobble wobble on for free. And you know Friday night is player hater night. As the first 100 haters get to play the back, and they can hate on everybody in the front watching Kelly's perform her hit, I Hate You So Much, right now. And come check out Sunday nights for Crooked Clergy Night. That's right. The first 10 preachers, pastors, rabbis, deacons, or any other clergymen who come in with a full collection plate get in for free. I can say amen to that. Tell them how you go to I Don't Know. Get off the Beltline on that really big exit. Then go down to the first light and bust a right. Go down about a block and bust another right. Bust another right. Then bust one more right. Then there you are. Where, homeboy? I don't know. When you have to ask yourself,
should I stay
or
should I go?
The answer should be,
I don't know.
We are 88.1 FM. 1 FM.
Welcome back to the Miles Hamilton Show here on WKNC. Joining me is Marty, and also from to join us in this last 10 minutes or so is DJ Kidna from the next show coming after this. So DJ Kidna, he wants, we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas and the supposed war on Christmas and all that other stuff. And
the most controversial time of the year.
Yes. So wonderful that I'm sure this is exactly what Jesus wanted when when he was setting up his new religion. I'm sure that's what he was thinking is, oh, man, I sure hope that a bunch of white people in a continent that I've never seen will argue with each other about whether it's appropriate to say happy holidays during the time of
all
of my
part of the master plan.
Yeah, all according to the master plan, exactly.
Let's see if they love me enough to do this.
I remember, Marty, you were telling me at least a story a couple nights ago or something about this one lady. And so I want you to recount that. Yeah. Please recount that story.
It's depressing to even remember. Ah, jeez. It was last Christmas. I was out buying our turkey for the dinner and everything, and I was in the frozen food aisle, and there was this woman and her young daughter, and the daughter apparently saw one of her teachers and said, hello, happy holidays, and her mother, this witch, just bended down and scolded her daughter for saying Merry Christmas and for saying Happy Holidays. She said, no, no, you say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, you know, this because Christmas Christ is the reason for the season. And she just berated this poor child until she said, Merry Christmas, I'm sorry. And it was heartbreaking. I hate to see my people act this way.
I know, it's like the most, it's the worst thing that you told me that story. But, you know, last Christmas, when around that time, I was working for Target. And, yeah, I know, I got out of that as soon as I could. But I was working for Target, and I came across those people whenever I had to run a cash register. I always hated it because there would always be one of those people who, you know, who would, if I didn't say anything, they'd look at me. And, you know, I don't know if they're Jewish or if they're Christian or if they're atheist or whatever.
No kidding.
And that's the point. So, you know, I'd say, and I think that was Target. Oh, I'm sorry. And I think that was Target policy, was to say Happy Holidays. You don't say Merry Christmas. But then it became like this whole big thing is like, people would come to Target specifically to see if you actually did that. And you know, those people who are like, you can't say Happy Holidays, you have to say Merry Christmas, would get on your case and they'd say, I want you to say Merry Christmas to me. And I would be like, okay, Merry Christmas.
Well, here's the thing, you know. Like you said, you don't know if these people are Christian, Jewish, Muslim, or atheist or what. No, you know, I mean, I feel comfortable saying Merry Christmas to people I know celebrate Christmas. That's fine and dandy. But if you're just going up to a stranger and they berate you for saying Happy Holidays, I'd be like, what's your problem? You know, at least I, you know, decided to say something to you instead of just ignoring you or ignoring, you know, this wonderful season. And I mean, I feel like it's kind of egotistical to think, you know, they can only say Merry Christmas. Christmas isn't the only thing that's going on, you know? So it's just really bizarre to me.
And just along with this is like, you know, I celebrate Christmas, but I always like it when people will say anything to me. If people say Happy Holidays, it's like, oh, you know, they're being nice. That's great.
Exactly.
But I never even think about, you know, like, oh, they're not saying Christmas. There's something wrong with those people. It's like, how dare they be so nice?
Sorry about that. Well, I was just going to say, you know, if you say Merry Christmas to someone, what if that person's atheist or Jewish, you know? Then they're going to be still like, how dare you for saying Merry Christmas to me? I'm atheist or Jewish or Muslim, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't, Happy Holidays. I mean, if you're just talking to a stranger, you don't know what they are. I mean, I feel like that's the best thing to do because, I mean, it's very generic. I mean, it's either that or happy non-denominational winter season holiday to you.
But, you know, they'd still get angry about that.
Probably.
If you... If you didn't say Merry Christmas. But, yeah, I wanted to get that. Is there anything else about Christmas that you guys would want to talk about? I wanted Marty to tell that story. It was
a real or a conspiracy?
Oh, well, a conspiracy will work. I'm fine with that.
Conspiracy theorists of the world unite.
It's Conspiracies are always good, especially since this is the last few minutes of my reign here on the radio.
Whereas Ahmadinejad, John, and David Duke would probably put it in their little Christmas card, Happy Zionist, you know, conspiracy.
That's a good way to round out the entire show there, Marty. Well, thanks so much.
I do have to say this one.
I can only say, if the Jewish really are, like, plotting some huge conspiracy to control the world and pull all the levers and everything, I can't think of a better people I would rather have doing it. Of Jewish people.
That's true. They are, you know, you couldn't find a friendlier bunch of people to rule the world.
They are friendly. Both of my roommates in college have been Jewish. They're great guys.
Yeah. Well,
I do want to say this, though, you know, saying a generic phrase, you know, because you don't know what the person is, that's fine and dandy. But I do believe that, you know, too much political correctness is really, you know, making problems for the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, you know, bunch everything up into a gray area. There has to always be, you know, the black and white side to everything. It can't just be a gray area and that's it. You can't mush everything up and hope everything's okay, because I think that just causes even more problems. You know, it's like I was saying with some of my coworkers at work with the whole, you know, it's politically correct to say African-American. You don't know if the person's African-American. They could be Haitian. They could be from, you know, they could be even Middle Eastern. There's a lot of Middle Easterns that are...
Or they might not even be Americans. They might just be Africans.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, you know, I think political correctness to, you know, extremes is really, really bad. But come on, people. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. That's not really a big deal.
Happy Hanukkah. Yeah.
It's not a big deal. If people said Happy Hanukkah to me, I wouldn't get up in a bad thing. I don't think I'd be mistaken for a Jewish person. But if it happened, if it was a blind man, if it happened, I would probably be, thank you. That's nice. Anyway, well, we're coming down to the final stretch. The world hasn't ended yet, but this last show was definitely a sign of the end times. So definitely expect it soon. I gotta say, thanks to Marty for coming on. A lot of people.
It was an honor and a pleasure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure a lot of people didn't actually believe that you actually existed.
I'm real.
But and I also want to thank DJ Kidna for coming on and for the last bit. And I want to thank all my loyal listeners, all like I don't know, four of you.
Hey, you got 21 web listeners.
I know. This is probably like the best I've done in like forever. Why is this happening now?
It's a fond farewell because you will be missed.
Oh, well, I sure hope so. Well, at least I'll be missed for the next 5 minutes or so.
Or maybe that's all the kids that have gone home already. Who knows?
And
but, you know, it's been a pleasure having you here, Miles.
Oh, well, thank you. And I definitely... appreciate everything that WKNC has done for me, and I definitely have enjoyed this radio show immensely. So with that, I am going to turn it over to DJ Kidna for Made in Japan, and this will be my final farewell. After this, I'm graduating and going on to the real world. So
and becoming a bum.
Yeah.
Unemployed, homeless, all that.
Yeah, well...
In the coldest time of the year. I mean, what is the weather up
What was I thinking,
well,
really?
Well, you have to remember, most bums have more ownership over things than most college students. So maybe it's a step up.
It might be a step up. I've moved up from starving college student to bum. So with that, that's probably the best point to stop this. You're listening to WKNC Raleigh 88.1.